the School of Public Health, State University of New York in Albany, talking about creating various small area health indicators using the same geographic scale.
Okay, so recently I retired from the New York State Health Department, so but I am on the faculty, but I spend half my year in France right now. So, but this is the one project that I had tremendous interest in keeping doing, and so I'm going to talk to you about trying to create health measures at finer scales. So there is a demand to create health indicators at fine geographic scales from a number of people: researchers, public health agencies, policymakers, healthcare providers, and I don't need to convince this crowd why that would be important. But there are challenges. The number of health events may not be adequate to provide stable health indicators in small areas. Creating the same geographic scale that can be used for multiple health measures may be problematic because, some may be more prevalent in older people and some may be, the incidence may be higher in younger people. And also, if you look at it over time, the census tracts that, the census areas actually change between the census. So I'm going to provide you with some solutions in the few minutes I have here with you, but I'll be around if any of you have any questions. So one way of overcoming the small number problem is through geographic aggregation. Well, first of all, we might want to temporally aggregate the data also, but I'm not, over several years, 5 years is what we've been doing to get to fine scales. So you can do geographic aggregation of census area, and that provides a solution to the small number problem. And we developed years ago the geographic aggregation tool, which can create such aggregation, and it's on my website. And we have done workshops here on how to use that tool in the past. So I'll just briefly go over this tool because we have limited amount of time, but any of you that are interested in it, you can talk to me later. So this geographic aggregation tool, the user decides how much aggregation is needed, and this can be based on the cases of the cases or the underlying population. You can say, for example, I want 250 births, and I want to make sure I have at least 3 low birth weight births if you're doing low birth weights, or you could aggregate based on the number of myocardial infarctions and the number of asthma cases. So you can do 2 variables at once, and you can do it in an iterative process. So if you wanted to do multiple indicators, you could actually run it a second time. It works with various levels of geography, census blocks, tracts, towns, zip codes, whatever kind of boundaries you have and data that you have it for. And it can nest one level of geography into another. So, for example, if you wanted to aggregate census tracts together, but you didn't want those newly aggregated areas to cross towns or counties, it will do that. It uses open source software, so you don't have to have any software. We originally developed the tool in SAS, but then you have to own SAS, and they change the versions of SAS periodically. And it outputs the results for using in mapping programs, including ArcGIS, MapInfo, Google Earth, and so you could actually look at your results without even having GIS software. So what is the issue? Always comes up, what is an unstable number? And so, I don't know what that little box is, but.
Did you escape?
Yeah, I don't.
That could.
Yeah, no, that's probably not a great idea.
So, on the, yeah, resume. There you go.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't touch that thing. let's see, page down.
The arrow
again. Oh, the arrow. Page down. Did I do something? Okay. Well, let's see. That's going the right way, right? Okay. Okay. So here's just an example. Originally, we developed for doing cancer. We had a legislation to develop, produce cancer counts at the census block level. There are 300,000 blocks in New York State. Some of those blocks only have one household. And so we developed it to do that, and we developed it in SAS because it was quite quick. So this is just an example. This is not real data, but if you look up here, we would start, for example, with census blocks. These could be tracts, and you'd have a certain number of cases. And we'd have the underlying boundaries. The boundaries are usually a shape file for those of you that do a GIS. And so in this case, the cancer registry people want us to aggregate to have 12 total cancer cases. It wasn't for stability and estimates. It was just to provide counts. And so you have the counts of cases, and you run it through we ran it through a SAS program, but more recently we've developed this R program, which is easier to use, and it has a GUI interface. And it outputs the same number of records, and it has the cases here, but now it tells you what region. So these two, since this one didn't have 12 cases, was merged with this one, and now you have 13 cases, and you can see how things were merged. Though when I did this, I kind of screwed up because I have 14 down there, but that's because I was just typing numbers. But anyway, so you have the region. So you have what's called a crosswalk file. You have a new file which has these three regions, and it's in a kind of a database format that you could bring into Excel or whatever. And then it creates these new boundaries with the cases. So that's generally how it operates. Okay. So I've been working also on a scale project. Some of you may have heard about this project to measure life expectancy. So we've used this tool. We've had geocoded over 400,000 deaths to the census tract in New York. And we wanted to have at least 60 deaths. And we wanted to aggregate. So in cities above 25,000, it would keep those aggregations within the actual cities, and in the more rural areas, it just wouldn't cross back into these cities or outside of the counties. So this just is an example showing how the aggregations worked. We did delete some of the census tracts because they had over 50% of the people were living in group quarters, and there were no deaths. So like this is Utica College, and oftentimes we find that there's no deaths reported there because they probably get reported where their parents live. It comes with a guide. This is the address. I think we're going to post all these slides on the CSD, so you can just download it. It comes with a full version of R. So once we agree on the population and temporal scales and define what we consider unstable, we need to determine which health indicators are feasible to map at each scale. So you can do a kind of a back of the envelope, calculate the relative standard error, and just taking the crude rates, you can kind of see all these different health outcomes. Oh, something happened there. Huh. Maybe they don't have the same fonts on this thing. Anyways, these are all the names of diseases. It's just a cell range for some reason on this computer. But, you know, there's things like mesothelioma and very rare diseases would be up here. And so if you had a population of, say, 25,000, you want to look at 25 years, you could actually just use this simple formula and just look at the crude rates and determine, which health conditions you might be able to create maps at that scale if you had 20,000, 5,000 people over 5 years. Yeah, I really don't understand why all these... I should have made a PDF file, I guess. And asthma, of course, is very common, so, you know, it would be way out here someplace. I hope that doesn't... So mapping each health measure at a different scale based on the numerators or denominator makes it difficult to compare results across health measures. For example, we would like to know, do areas that have a high incidence of disease A also have a high incidence of disease B? You know, you don't want to put them on different scales because they have different numerators or denominators. So the solution is to use the same geographic scales for multiple health indicators, if possible. So I had to kind of look around for data that had all been geocoded, where there were multiple health outcomes. And we had, as I mentioned, worked for a number of years geocoding cancer data. And so all this data was all put at the... block group scale, though traditionally we tried to work at this track scale. And just looking at the crude rates, you can calculate on average what population you would want to need over, a 5-year period to get 20 cases. So certainly if we're looking at nasal cancer up here, you know, you need over 500,000 people. So that's probably not a very practical thing to look at sub-county scales. But if you go into the more common types of cancer, you have colorectal cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer. If you had asthma and other things, they would be down here too someplace. And so looking at the crude rates, you'd say, okay, at this scale, you'd need about at least 10,000 people to get 20 cases. And as you get up here into these types of cancers, you know, maybe 40,000 would be adequate, and up here 100,000. And this was all just kind of back of the envelope calculations that are reasonably easy to do. So just giving you an example, you know, we had about 14,000 block groups in New York State. Actually, we had aggregated a few of them just to reduce the confidentiality issues. And so this represents just one county, but I did this for the whole state. And so in this case, there's 216 block groups in Albany. I first started out just to look at how things were, you know, try out. I did an aggregating all those block groups so they had at least a 5,000 population. And I did the whole state, but I'm just for the purpose of displaying this. So this produced like 41 areas. And then I took those. You can actually nest all these 5,000 areas into another area. So if you had rare conditions, you could actually nest those beneath each other. You could have rare conditions at one scale and then another scale, let's say 40,000 or in this case, these areas are 5,000. The blue areas are 10,000. And then I looked at the results. So if you remember from before, I said these cancers, you know, if you aggregate, so you have, you know, it's 5 years worth of data. If you aggregate to 10,000, you should get most of them that have at least 20 cases. But you see colorectal cancer, there's 9% of them didn't have 20 cases, and lung cancer, 8%. So some of them, because of the demographics of those areas, still didn't have enough cancer cases. So how do you try to resolve some of those issues? We'll talk about that in a minute. If I look at the different scales that I just did, this was the original scale where the average population was 1,400, then 5,000 and 10,000. You see that almost all of these common types of cancer over a 5-year period would not have enough data to have 20 cases. But as you get into 5,000, about half of them at colorectal cancer had adequate numbers. And then, you know, as I showed you earlier, at 10,000, you know, you're getting most of them that have at least 20 cases. So these areas that have, that I aggregated 10,000, I looked at those, and sure enough, a lot of those were in areas like, this is Ithaca, where you have Cornell University, and you have, Ithaca College, and only 1% of the population is over 65. And so those are cancers that normally affect, 5 minutes? Okay. They would normally affect older people, but they were, you know, normally we'd have 13.5% of people over 65. So these areas, didn't have enough cancer cases, even though we had 10,000 population. So the challenge in the previous example was how to resolve this issue that we thought we aggregated enough, perhaps 10,000, but the solution would be to aggregate to ensure a certain number of older persons. So you could, rather than aggregate on the total population, you could pick something like 65 plus in each area, or aggregate until there is a set number of expected cancer cases in each area, or something that works with the demography of that area. And so I did that. In this case, I aggregated, this is the original aggregation, 10,000 population, and I redid it, and saying since about 13.5% of the population is over 65, I aggregated to 1,351. And you can see the number of areas that came out of this aggregation are about the same. For the state, we got 1,287, when I originally did it. And when I did a second time, I had 1,281. So I didn't lose any resolution. But the number of areas that had less than 20 declined dramatically. So that was, you know, you'll never get down to where you get everything perfect. But I think this is a reasonable solution. So how do we create stable measures on the same scale for diseases such as heart attack, which are more common in older populations, along with health measures of adverse birth outcomes, which are more common in younger populations? again, you know, I showed a university setting. Well, this is, you know, older people, 55 and older communities with nursing homes. And in this case, 90% of the population lives in are over over 65, and there are very few births, and so it'd be very hard to look at low birth weight. So the solution is to aggregate to ensure a certain number of both older and younger people in the same areas, or you could aggregate until there's a set number of expected births and deaths. Or in a previous sub-county project, I aggregated a set number of myocardial infarctions and births, and that seemed to work well. Or you could aggregate until there's a set number of... That's the same thing. That's a repeat, so that's not... But in this previous sub-county project, I aggregated a set number of myocardial infarctions and births in an area. And so I started with 2,700 tracts in the upstate area, and I wanted 30 myocardial infarctions and 270 births. And the results were we got 1,100 areas. And we did have adequate numbers of low birth weights. So every area had above 15. Every area had at least 30 myocardial infarctions. And we actually had, in general, enough deaths to do low, life expectancy. So I mentioned tracts can split and tracts can merge between census. And so you have to do some aggregation, and they can change between tracts. So this is just a slide showing the 2000 census tract boundaries and the 2010 census back boundaries. And so in this case, what you need to do is go through and merge the ones that split, and you need to merge them back together. These represent the red arrows. Sometimes it goes the other direction, so then you might have to merge the 2000 census tract. So you do these merging ahead of time, so then you have a consistent geography. And sometimes it's not just merging and splitting, but the boundary can shift. So in this case, this little area here, we have census block data, and we know that there's 100 people there. This could have been a park. If there's nobody there, then you don't have to worry about it. So in this case, you want to merge both the 2000 and the 2010. And there are tools that are being developed, I believe, in Minnesota to do those types of things. We do it using our GIS. And that was it. I think I was on time.
Yeah.
Thanks for giving me that.
Another great presentation. We do have time for one quick question. There is one. I have a long one, but that's... Yeah.
So when you merge the different census tracts, say if you have two candidates can both reach the threshold, let's say 10,000 population, is it a random combining?
No. You'd have to look at the tool. I give a whole thing on the tool, but there's three options.
Okay.
You can choose to merge a census tract, for example. Say you're interested in poverty. You can merge that census tract. It will tend to merge with another census tract which has the same poverty level. Okay. Or the same race. Or we do a lot of stuff to create the most compact area. So oftentimes we're looking at environmental issues. So we just pick the closest area. But there are three different options. And if you read about our guide, it tells you, what those options are.
So you can submit a supplemental file or something with the other characteristics.
Yeah, you would have poverty. You'd have the number of people under poverty and the population. And it does that calculation on the fly. So as it merges, it calculates a new poverty with that merge. And then it goes out and looks, so it's an iterative process. And
nice.
Again, yeah. So.
Thank you.
Okay, let's